Penelope kept her expression scrupulously even. "I find myself at loose ends," Lady Danbury said, holding up her hands as if in surrender. "I'd like to see one last person happily settled before I go."
"Don't talk that way, Lady Danbury," Penelope said, impulsively reaching out and taking her hand. She gave it a little squeeze. "You'll outlive us all, I am certain."
"Pfft, don't be silly."
Lady Danbury's tone was dismissive, but she made no move to remove her hand from Penelope's grasp.
"I'm not being depressive," she added. "I'm just realistic. I've passed 70 years of age, and I'm not going to tell you how many years ago that was. I haven't much time left in this world, and that doesn't bother me one bit."
Penelope hoped she would be able to face her own mortality with the same equanimity.
"But I like you, Miss Featherington. You remind me of myself. You're not afraid to speak your mind."
Penelope could only look at her in shock. She'd spent the last 10 years of her life never quite saying what she wanted to say. With people she knew well, she was open and honest, and even sometimes a little funny. But among strangers, her tongue was quite firmly tied. She remembered a masquerade ball she'd once attended. She'd attended many masquerade balls, actually, but this one had been unique, because she'd actually found a costume, nothing special, just a gown styled as if from the 1600s, in which she'd truly felt her identity was hidden. It had probably been the mask. It was overly large and covered almost all of her face. She had felt transformed. Suddenly free of the burden of being Penelope Featherington, she felt a new personality coming to the fore. It wasn't as if she had been putting on false airs. Rather, it was more like her true self, the one she didn't know how to show to anyone she didn't know well, had finally broken loose. She'd laughed, she'd joked, she'd even flirted, and she'd sworn that the following night, when the costumes were all put away and she was once again attired in her finest evening dress, she'd remember how to be herself. But it hadn't happened. She'd arrived at the ball, and she'd nodded and smiled politely, and once again found herself standing near the perimeter of the room, quite literally a wallflower. It seemed that being Penelope Featherington meant something. Her lot had been cast years ago, during that first awful season when her mother had insisted she make her debut, even though Penelope had begged otherwise. The pudgy girl, the awkward girl, the one always dressed in colours that didn't suit her. It didn't matter that she'd slimmed and grown graceful and finally thrown out all of her yellow dresses. In this world, the world of London society and the ton, she would always be the same old Penelope Featherington. It was her own fault just as much as anyone else's. A vicious circle, really. Every time Penelope stepped into a ballroom and she saw all those people who had known her for so long, she felt herself folding up inside, turning into the shy, awkward girl of years gone past, rather than the self-assured woman she liked to think she'd become, at least in her heart.
"Miss Featherington," came Lady Danbury's soft and surprisingly gentle voice. "Is something wrong?"
Penelope knew she took longer than she should have to reply, but somehow she needed a few seconds to find her voice.
"I don't think I know how to speak my mind," she finally said, turning to look at Lady Danbury only as she uttered the final words of the sentence. "I never know what to say to people."
"You know what to say to me."
"You're different."
Lady Danbury threw her head back and laughed.
"If ever there was an understatement. Oh, Penelope, I hope you don't mind if I call you by your given name. If you can speak your mind to me, you can speak it to anyone. Half the grown men in this room run cowering into corners the minute they see me coming."
"They just don't know you," Penelope said, patting her on the hand.
And they don't know you either, Lady Danbury quite pointedly replied.
No, Penelope said, a touch of resignation in her voice. They don't.
I'd say that it was their loss, but that would be rather cavalier of me, Lady Danbury said. Not to them, but to you. Because as often as I call them all fools, and I do call them fools often, as I'm sure you know, some of them are actually rather decent people, and it's a crime they haven't gotten to know you. I wonder what is going on.
Penelope found herself unaccountably sitting up a little straighter. She asked Lady Danbury, "What do you mean?" But it was clear that something was afoot. People were whispering and motioning to the small dais where the musicians were seated.
"You there!"
Lady Danbury said, poking her cane into the hip of a nearby gentleman.
"What is going on?" "Cressida Tombley wants to make some sort of announcement," he said,
then quickly stepped away, presumably to avoid any further conversation with Lady Danbury or her cane.
"I hate Cressida Tombley," Penelope muttered.
Lady Danbury choked on a bit of laughter.
"And you say you don't know how to speak your mind? Don't keep me in suspense. Why do you detest her so?"
Penelope shrugged. "She's always behaved quite badly toward me."
Lady Danbury nodded knowingly.
"All bullies have a favourite victim."
"It's not so bad now," Penelope said. "But back when we were both out, when she was still Cressida Cooper, she never could resist the chance to torment me. And people, well..."
She shook her head.
"Never mind."
"No, please," Lady Danbury said. "Do go on."
Penelope sighed.
"It's nothing, really. Just that I've noticed that people don't often rush to another's defence. Cressida was popular, at least with a certain set, and she was rather frightening to the other girls our age. No one dared go against her. Well, almost no one."
That got Lady Danbury's attention, and she smiled.
"Who was your champion, Penelope?"
"Champions, actually," Penelope replied. "The Bridgertons always came to my aid. Anthony Bridgerton once gave her the cut direct and took me into dinner and..."
Her voice rose with remembered excitement.
"He really shouldn't have done so. It was a formal dinner party, and he was supposed to escort in some marchioness, I think."
She sighed, treasuring the memory.
"It was lovely."
"He is a good man, that Anthony Bridgerton."
Penelope nodded.
"His wife told me that that was the day she fell in love with him, when she saw him being my hero."
Lady Danbury smiled.
"And has the younger Mr. Bridgerton ever rushed to your aid?"
"Colin, you mean?"
Penelope didn't even wait for Lady Danbury's nod before adding,
"Of course, although never with quite so much drama. But I must say, as nice as it is that the Bridgertons are so supportive..."
"What is it, Penelope?"
Lady Danbury asked. Penelope sighed again. It seemed a night for sighs.
"I just wish they didn't have to defend me so often. You'd think I could defend myself, or at least comport myself in such a manner so that no defending was necessary."
Lady Danbury patted her hand.
"I think you get on a great deal better than you think you do. And as for that Cressida Tombley..."
Lady Danbury's face soured with distaste.
"Well, she got her just deserts, if you ask me. Although," she added sharply, "people don't ask me as often as they should."
Penelope could not quite suppress a little snort of laughter.
"Look where she is now," Lady Danbury said sharply. "Widowed, and without even a fortune to show for it. She married that old lecher Horace Tombley, and it turned out he'd managed to fool everyone into thinking he had money. Now she has nothing but fading good looks."
Honesty compelled Penelope to say,
"She is still quite attractive."
"If you like flashy women."
Lady Danbury's eyes narrowed.
"There is something far too obvious about that woman."
Penelope looked toward the dais, where Cressida was waiting, standing there with a surprising amount of patience while the ballroom quieted down.
I wonder what she is going to say.
Nothing that could possibly interest me, Lady Danbury retorted.
Oh. She stopped, and her lips curved into the oddest of expressions. A little bit frown, a little bit smile.
What is it? Penelope asked.
She craned her neck to try to see Lady Danbury's line of vision, but a rather portly gentleman was blocking her way.
Your Mr. Bridgerton is approaching, Lady Danbury said, the smile edging out the frown. And he looks quite determined.
Penelope immediately twisted her head around.
For the love of God, girl, don't look!
Lady Danbury exclaimed, jamming her elbow into Penelope's upper arm.
He'll know you're interested.
I don't think there's much of a chance he hasn't figured that out already, Penelope mumbled.
And then there he was, standing splendidly in front of her, looking like some handsome god, deigning to grace earth with his presence.
Lady Danbury, he said,
executing a smooth and graceful bow.
Miss Featherington.
Mr. Bridgerton, Lady Danbury said. How nice to see you.
Colin looked to Penelope.
Mr. Bridgerton, she murmured, not knowing what else to say.
What did one say to a man one had recently kissed? Penelope certainly had no experience in that area, not to mention the added complication of his storming out of the house once they were through.
I'd hoped,
Colin began, then stopped and frowned, looking up toward the dais. What is everyone looking at?
Cressida Tumbley has some sort of announcement, Lady Danbury said.
Colin's face slid into a vaguely annoyed frown.
Can't imagine what she has to say that I'd want to listen to, he muttered.
Penelope couldn't help but grin. Cressida Tumbley was considered a leader in society, or at least she had been when she'd been young and unmarried, but the Bridgertons had never liked her, and somehow that had always made Penelope feel a little better. Just then a trumpet blared, and the room fell silent as everyone turned their attention to the Earl of Macclesfield, who was standing on the dais next to Cressida, looking vaguely uncomfortable with all the attention. Penelope smiled. She'd been told the Earl had once been a terrible rake, but now he was a rather scholarly sort, devoted to his family. He was still handsome enough to be a rake, though, almost as handsome as Colin, but only almost. Penelope knew she was biased, but it was difficult to imagine any creature quite as magnetically good-looking as Colin when he was smiling.
"Good evening,"
the Earl said loudly.
"Good evening to you,"
came a drunken shout from the back of the room. The Earl gave a good-natured nod, a tolerant half-smile playing along his lips.
"My esteemed guest here," he motioned to Cressida, "would like to make an announcement. So, if you would all give your attention to the lady beside me, I give you Lady Tumbley."
A low ripple of whispers spread across the room as Cressida stepped forward, nodding regally at the crowd. She waited for the room to fall into stark silence, and then she said,
"Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for taking time out of your festivities to lend me your attention."
"Hurry up with it!"
someone shouted, probably the same person who had yelled good evening to the Earl. Cressida ignored the interruption.
"I have come to the conclusion that I can no longer continue the deception that has ruled my life for the last 11 years.
The ballroom was rocked with a low buzz of whispers. Everyone knew what she was going to say, and yet no one could believe it was actually true.
Therefore,
Cressida continued, her voice growing in volume,
I have decided to reveal my secret. Ladies and gentlemen, I am Lady Whistledown.
Chapter 11. Colin couldn't remember the last time he'd entered a ballroom with quite so much apprehension. The last few days had not been among his best. He'd been in a bad mood, which had only been worsened by the fact that he was rather renowned for his good humour, which meant that everyone had felt compelled to comment on his foul disposition. There was nothing worse for a bad mood than being subjected to constant queries of, "Why are you in such a bad mood?" His family had stopped asking after he'd actually snarled at Hyacinth when she'd asked him to accompany her to the theatre the following week. Colin hadn't even been aware that he knew how to snarl. He was going to have to apologise to Hyacinth, which was going to be a chore, since Hyacinth never accepted apologies gracefully, at least not those that came from fellow Bridgertons. But Hyacinth was the least of his problems. Colin groaned. His sister wasn't the only person who deserved his apology. And that was why his heart was beating with this strange, nervous, and completely unprecedented rapidity as he entered the Macclesfield ballroom. Penelope would be here. He knew she'd be here because she always attended the major balls, even if she was now most often doing so as her sister's chaperone. There was something quite humbling in feeling nervous about seeing Penelope. Penelope was Penelope. It was almost as if she'd always been there, smiling politely at the perimeter of a ballroom, and he'd taken her for granted, in a way. Some things didn't change, and Penelope was one of them. Except she had changed. Colin didn't know when it had happened, or even if anyone other than himself had noticed it. But Penelope Featherington was not the same woman he used to know. Or maybe she was, and he had changed, which made him feel even worse, because if that was the case, then Penelope had been interesting and lovely and kissable years ago, and he hadn't the maturity to notice. No, better to think that Penelope had changed. Colin had never been a great fan of self-flagellation. Whatever the case, he needed to make his apology, and he needed to do it soon. He had to apologise for the kiss, because she was a lady, and he was, most of the time at least, a gentleman. And he had to apologise for behaving like a raving idiot afterward, because it was simply the right thing to do. God only knew what Penelope thought he thought of her now. It wasn't difficult to find her once he entered the ballroom. He didn't bother to look among the dancing couples, which angered him. Why didn't the other men think to ask her to dance? Rather, he focused his attention along the walls, and sure enough, there she was, seated on a long bench next to, oh God, Lady Danbury. Well, there was nothing else to do but walk right up. The way Penelope and the old busybody were clutching each other's hands, he couldn't expect Lady Danbury to disappear any time soon. When he reached the pair of ladies, he turned first to Lady Danbury and swept into an elegant bow. "Lady Danbury," he said, before turning his attention to Penelope. "Miss Featherington." "Mr. Bridgerton," Lady Danbury said, with a surprising lack of sharpness in her voice. "How nice to see you." He nodded, then looked to Penelope, wondering what she was thinking, and whether he'd be able to see it in her eyes. But whatever she was thinking, or feeling, it was hidden under a rather thick layer of nervousness. Or maybe the nervousness was all she was feeling. He couldn't really blame her. The way he'd stormed out of her drawing room without an explanation, she had to feel confused. And it was his experience that confusion invariably led to apprehension. "Mr. Bridgerton," she finally murmured, her entire bearing scrupulously polite. He cleared his throat. How to extract her from Lady Danbury's clutches? He'd really rather not humble himself in front of the nosy old countess. "I'd hoped," he began, intending to say that he'd hoped to have a private word with Penelope. Lady Danbury would be ferociously curious, but there was really no other course of action, and it would probably do her good to be left in the dark for once. But just as his lips were forming his query, he realised that something strange was afoot in the Macclesfield ballroom. People were whispering and pointing toward the small orchestra, whose members had recently laid their instruments down. Furthermore, neither Penelope nor Lady Danbury were paying him the least attention. "What is everyone looking at?" Colin asked. Lady Danbury didn't even bother looking back at him as she replied,
"Cressida Tombley has some sort of announcement."
How annoying. He'd never liked Cressida. She'd been mean and petty when she was Cressida Cooper, and she was meaner and pettier as Cressida Tombley. But she was beautiful, and she was intelligent, in a rather cruel sort of way, and so she was still considered a leader in certain society circles.
"Can't imagine what she has to say that I want to listen to," Colin muttered.
He spied Penelope trying to stifle a smile, and flashed her an "I caught you" sort of look, but it was the sort of "I caught you" look that also said, "And I agree completely."
"Good evening,"
came the loud voice of the Earl of Macclesfield.
"Good evening to you,"
replied some drunken fool in the back. Colin twisted to see who it was, but the crowd had grown too thick. The Earl spoke some more. Then Cressida opened her mouth, at which point Colin ceased paying attention. Whatever Cressida had to say, it wasn't going to help him solve his main problem, figuring out exactly how he was going to apologise to Penelope. He'd tried rehearsing the words in his mind, but they never sounded quite right, and so he was hoping his famously glib tongue would lead him in the right direction when the time came. Surely she'd understand.
"Whistle down!"
Colin only caught the last word of Cressida's monologue, but there was no way he could have missed the massive, collective, indrawn breath that swept the ballroom. Followed by the flurry of harsh, urgent whispers, one generally only hears after someone is caught in a very embarrassing, very public, compromising position.
"What?"
he blurted out, turning to Penelope, who'd gone white as a sheet.
"What did she say?"
But Penelope was speechless. He looked to Lady Danbury, but the old lady had her hand over her mouth and looked as if she might possibly swoon, which was somewhat alarming, as Colin would have bet large sums of money that Lady Danbury had never once swooned in all of her 70-odd years.
"What?"
he demanded again, hoping one of them would break free of her stupor.
"It can't be true,"
Lady Danbury finally whispered, her mouth slack even as she spoke the words.
"I don't believe it."
"What?"
She pointed toward Cressida, her extended index finger quivering in the flickering candlelight.
"That lady is not Lady Whistledown."
Colin's head snapped back and forth. To Cressida, to Lady Danbury, to Cressida, to Penelope.
"She's Lady Whistledown," he finally blurted out.
"So she says,"
Lady Danbury replied, doubt written all over her face. Colin tended to agree with her. Cressida Tombley was the last person he'd have pegged as Lady Whistledown. She was smart, there was no denying that, but she wasn't clever, and she wasn't terribly witty, unless she was poking fun at others. Lady Whistledown had a rather cutting sense of humour, but with the exception of her infamous comments on fashion, she never seemed to pick on the less popular members of society. When all was said and done, Colin had to say that Lady Whistledown had rather good taste in people.
"I can't believe this,"
Lady Danbury said, with a loud snort of disgust.
"If I'd dreamed this would happen, I would never have made that beastly challenge."
"This is horrible,"
Penelope whispered. Her voice was quavering, and it made Colin uneasy.
"Are you all right?"
he asked. She shook her head.
"No, I don't think I am. I feel rather ill, actually."
"Do you want to leave?"
Penelope shook her head again.
"But I'll sit right here, if you don't mind."
"Of course," he said, keeping a concerned eye on her. She was still terribly pale.
"Oh, for the love of—"
Lady Danbury blasphemed, which took Colin by surprise. But then she actually swore, which he thought might very well have tilted the planet on its axis.
"Lady Danbury?"
he asked, gaping.
"She's coming this way,"
she muttered, jerking her head to the right.
"I should have known I'd not escape."
Colin looked to his left. Cressida was trying to make her way through the crowd, presumably to confront Lady Danbury and collect her prize. She was, naturally, being accosted at every turn by fellow partygoers. She seemed to be revelling in the attention. No big surprise there. Cressida had always revelled in attention, but she also seemed rather determined to reach Lady Danbury's side.
"There's no way to avoid her, I'm afraid,"
Colin said to Lady Danbury.
"I know," she grumbled. "I've been trying to avoid her for years, and I've never succeeded. I thought I was so clever."
She looked to Colin, shaking her head with disgust.
"I thought it would be such fun to rout out Lady Whistledown."
Well, it was fun,"
Colin said, not really meaning it. Lady Danbury jabbed him in the leg with her cane.
"It's not the least bit fun, you foolish boy. Now look what I have to do."
She waved the cane toward Cressida, who was drawing ever closer.
"I never dreamed I'd have to deal with the likes of her."
"Lady Danbury,"
Cressida said, swishing to a stop in front of her.
"How nice to see you."
Lady Danbury had never been known for her pleasantries, but even she outdid herself by skipping any pretense of a greeting before snapping.
"I suppose you're here to try to collect your money."
Cressida cocked her head to the side in a very pretty, very practiced manner.
"You did say you would give £1,000 to whomever unmasked Lady Whistledown."
She shrugged, lifting her hands in the air and then twisting them gracefully until her palms were up in a gesture of false humility.
"You never stipulated that I couldn't unmask myself."
Lady Danbury rose to her feet, narrowed her eyes, and said,
"I don't believe it's you."
Colin liked to think that he was rather suave and unflappable, but even he gasped at that. Cressida's blue eyes blazed with fury, but she quickly regained control of her emotions and said,
"I would be shocked if you did not behave with a degree of scepticism, Lady Danbury. After all, it is not your way to be trusting and gentle."
Lady Danbury smiled. Well, perhaps not a smile, but her lips did move.
"I shall take that as a compliment," she said, "and allow you to tell me that you meant it as such."
Colin watched the stalemate with interest, and with a growing sense of alarm, until Lady Danbury turned quite suddenly to Penelope, who had risen to her feet mere seconds after she had.
"What do you think, Miss Featherington?"
Lady Danbury asked. Penelope visibly started, her entire body jerking slightly as she stammered,
"What? I beg your pardon."
"What do you think?" Lady Danbury persisted. "Is Lady Tombley Lady Whistledown?"
I'm sure I don't know."
"Oh, come now, Miss Featherington."
Lady Danbury planted her hands on her hips and looked at Penelope with an expression that bordered on exasperation.
"Surely you have an opinion on the matter?"
Colin felt himself stepping forward. Lady Danbury had no right to speak to Penelope in such a manner, and furthermore, he didn't like the expression on Penelope's face. She looked trapped, like a fox in a hunt, her eyes darting to him with a panic he'd never seen there before. He'd seen Penelope uncomfortable, and he'd seen her pained, but he'd never seen her truly panicked. And then it occurred to him. She hated being the centre of attention. She might poke fun at her status as a wallflower and a spinster, and she'd probably have liked a little more attention from society. But this kind of attention, with everyone staring at her and awaiting the merest word from her lips, she was miserable. "Miss Featherington," Collins said smoothly, moving to her side, "you look unwell. Would you like to leave?"
"Yes,"
she said. But then something strange happened. She changed. He didn't know how else to describe it. She simply changed. Right there, in the Macclesfield ballroom, by his side, Penelope Featherington became someone else. Her spine stiffened, and he could swear the heat from her body increased, and she said,
"No. No, I have something to say."
Lady Danbury smiled. Penelope looked straight at the old countess and said,
"I don't think she's Lady Whistledown. I think she's lying."
Colin instinctively pulled Penelope a little closer to his side. Cressida looked as if she might go for her throat.
"I've always liked Lady Whistledown,"
Penelope said, her chin rising until her bearing was almost regal. She looked to Cressida, and their eyes caught as she added,
"And it would break my heart if she turned out to be someone like Lady Tombley."
Colin took her hand and squeezed it. He couldn't help himself.
"Well said, Miss Featherington,"
Lady Danbury exclaimed, clapping her hands together in delight.
"That is exactly what I was thinking, but I couldn't find the words."
She turned to Colin with a smile.
"She's very clever, you know."
"I know," he replied, a strange new pride brimming within him.
"Most people don't notice it,"
Lady Danbury said, twisting so that her words were directed to, and probably only heard by, Colin. "I know," he murmured, "but I do." He had to smile at Lady Danbury's behaviour, which he was certain was chosen in part to annoy the devil out of Cressida, who did not like to be ignored.
"I will not be insulted by that nothing,"
Cressida fumed. She turned to Penelope with a seething glare and hissed,
"I demand an apology."
Penelope just nodded slowly and said,
"That is your prerogative."
And then she said nothing more. Colin had to physically wipe the smile from his face. Cressida clearly wanted to say more, and perhaps commit an act of violence while she was at it. But she held back, presumably because it was obvious that Penelope was among friends. She had always been renowned for her poise, however, and thus Colin was not surprised when she composed herself, turned to Lady Danbury, and said,
"What do you plan to do about the £1,000?
Lady Danbury looked at her for the longest second Colin had ever endured. Then she turned to him. Dear God, the last thing he wanted to do was get involved in this disaster, and asked,
"And what do you think, Mr. Bridgerton? Is our Lady Tombley telling the truth?"
Colin gave her a practiced smile.
"You must be mad if you think I'm going to offer an opinion."
"You're a surprisingly wise man, Mr. Bridgerton,"
Lady Danbury said approvingly. He nodded modestly, then ruined the effect by saying,
"I pride myself on it."
But what the hell? It wasn't every day a man was called wise by Lady Danbury. Most of her adjectives, after all, were of the decidedly negative variety. Cressida didn't even bother to bat her eyelashes at him. As Colin had already reflected, she wasn't stupid, just mean, and after a dozen years out in society, she had to know that he didn't much like her, and certainly wasn't about to fall prey to her charms. Instead, she looked squarely at Lady Danbury, and kept her voice evenly modulated as she asked,
"What shall we do now, my lady?"
Lady Danbury's lips pursed together until she almost appeared mouthless. Then she said,
"I need proof."
Cressida blinked.
"I beg your pardon?"
"Proof!"
Lady Danbury's cane slammed against the floor with remarkable force.
Which letter of the word did you not understand? I'm not handing over a king's ransom without proof.
1,000 pounds is hardly a king's ransom,
Cressida said, her expression growing petulant. Lady Danbury's eyes narrowed.
Then why are you so keen to get it?
Cressida was silent for a moment, but there was a tightness in everything about her, her stance, her posture, the line of her jaw. Everyone knew that her husband had left her in bad financial straits, but this was the first time anyone had hinted as such to her face.
Get me proof, Lady Danbury said, and I'll give you the money.
Are you saying,
Cressida said, and even as he despised her, Colin was forced to admire her ability to keep her voice even,
that my word is not good enough?
That's precisely what I'm saying, Lady Danbury barked. Good God, girl, you don't get to be my age without being allowed to insult anyone you please.
Colin thought he heard Penelope choking, but when he stole a glance at her, there she was at his side, avidly watching the exchange. Her brown eyes were huge and luminous in her face, and she'd regained most of the colour she'd lost when Cressida had made her unexpected announcement. In fact, now Penelope looked positively intrigued by the goings-on.
Fine,
Cressida said, her voice low and deadly.
I will bring you proof in a fortnight's time.
What sort of proof? Colin asked, then mentally kicked himself. The last thing he wanted to do was embroil himself in this mess, but his curiosity had gotten the better of him. Cressida turned to him, her face remarkably placid, considering the insult she'd just been dealt by Lady Danbury before countless witnesses.
You shall know it when I deliver it,
she told him archly. And then she held out her arm, waiting for one of her minions to take it and lead her away. Which was really quite amazing, because a young man, a besotted fool from all appearances, materialised at her side as if she'd conjured him by the mere tilt of her arm. A moment later they were gone.
Well,
Lady Danbury said, after everyone had stood in reflective, or maybe stunned, silence for nearly a minute.
That was unpleasant. I've never liked her,
Colin said, to no one in particular. A small crowd had gathered around them, so his words were heard by more than Penelope and Lady Danbury, but he didn't much care.
Colin!
He turned to see Hyacinth skidding through the crowd, dragging along Felicity Featherington as she barreled to his side.
What did she say?
Hyacinth asked breathlessly.
We tried to get here sooner, but it's been such a crush.
She said exactly what you would have expected her to say, he replied. Hyacinth pulled a face.
Men are never good for gossip. I want exact words.
It's very interesting, Penelope said suddenly. Something about the thoughtful tone of her voice demanded attention, and in seconds the entire crowd had quieted.
Speak up, Lady Danbury instructed. We're all listening.
Colin expected such a demand to make Penelope uncomfortable, but whatever silent infusion of confidence she'd experienced a few minutes earlier was still with her, because she stood straight and proud as she said,
Why would someone reveal herself as Lady Whistledown? For the money, of course,
Hyacinth said. Penelope shook her head.
Yes, but you'd think that Lady Whistledown would be quite wealthy by now. We've all been paying for her paper for years.
By God, she's right,
Lady Danbury exclaimed. Perhaps Cressida merely sought attention, Colin suggested. It wasn't such an unbelievable hypothesis. Cressida had spent the bulk of her adult life trying to place herself at the centre of attention.
I'd thought of that, Penelope allowed. But does she really want this sort of attention? Lady Whistledown has insulted quite a few people over the years.
No one who means anything to me, Colin joked. Then, when it became obvious that his companions required an explanation, he added,
Haven't you all noticed that Lady Whistledown only insults the people who need insulting?
Penelope cleared her throat delicately.
I have been referred to as an overripe citrus fruit.
He waved off her concern.
Except for the bits about fashion, of course.
Penelope must have decided not to pursue the matter any further, because all she did was give Colin a long, assessing stare before turning back to Lady Danbury and saying,
Lady Whistledown has no motive to reveal herself. Cressida obviously does.
Lady Danbury beamed. Then, all at once, her face scrunched into a frown.
I suppose I'll have to give her the fortnight to come up with her proof. Fair play and all that.
I, for one, will be very interested to see what she comes up with,
Hyacinth put in. She turned to Penelope and added,
I say, you're very clever. Did you know that?
Penelope blushed modestly. Then she turned to her sister and said,
We must be going, Felicity.
So soon?
Felicity asked. And to his horror, Colin realised that he'd mouthed the very same words.
Mother wanted us home early,
Penelope said. Felicity looked truly perplexed.
She did. She did, Penelope said emphatically. And besides that, I am not feeling well.
Felicity nodded glumly.
I shall instruct a footman to see that our carriage is brought around. No, you stay,
Penelope said, placing a hand on her sister's arm.
I will see to it.
I will see to it,
Colin announced. Really, what was the use of being a gentleman when ladies insisted upon doing things for themselves? And then, before he even realised what he was doing, he'd facilitated Penelope's departure, and she left the scene without his ever having apologised to her. He supposed he should have deemed the evening a failure for that reason alone, but in all truth he couldn't quite bring himself to do so. After all, he'd spent the better part of 5 minutes holding her hand.
Chapter 12. It wasn't until Colin woke up the following morning that he realised he still hadn't apologised to Penelope. Strictly speaking, it probably was no longer necessary that he do so. Even though they'd barely spoken at the Macclesfield ball the night before, they seemed to have forged an unspoken truce. Still, Colin didn't think he'd feel comfortable in his own skin until he spoke the words, I'm sorry. It was the right thing to do. He was a gentleman, after all. And besides, he rather fancied seeing her that morning. He'd gone to number 5 for breakfast with his family, but he wanted to head straight for home after seeing Penelope, so he hopped in his carriage for the trip to the Featherington home on Mount Street, even though the distance was short enough to make him feel utterly lazy for doing so. He smiled contentedly and lay back against the squabs, watching the lovely springtime scene roll by his window. It was one of those perfect sorts of days when everything simply felt right. The sun was shining. He felt remarkably energised. He'd had an excellent morning meal. Life really didn't get better than this. And he was going over to see Penelope. Colin chose not to analyse why he was so eager to see her. That was the sort of thing an unmarried man of 33 didn't generally care to think about. Instead, he simply enjoyed the day. The sun, the air, even the 3 neat townhouses he passed on Mount Street before spying Penelope's front door. There was nothing remotely different or original about any of them, but it was such a perfect morning that they seemed unusually charming, butted up next to each other, tall and thin and stately with their grey Portland stone. It was a wonderful day, warm and serene, sunny and tranquil. Except that just as he started to rise from his seat, a short flurry of movement across the street caught his eye. Penelope. She was standing on the corner of Mount and Penta Streets, the far corner,
the one that would not be visible to anyone looking out a window in the Featherington home. And she was climbing into a hired hack. Interesting. Colin frowned, mentally smacking himself on the forehead. It wasn't interesting. What the hell was he thinking? It wasn't interesting at all. It might have been interesting had she been, say, a man, or it might have been interesting if the conveyance into which she'd just entered had been one from the Featherington Mews and not some scruffy hired hack. But no, this was Penelope, who was certainly not a man, and she was entering a carriage by herself, presumably heading to some completely unsuitable location, because if she were doing anything proper and normal, she'd be in a Featherington conveyance. Or, better yet, with one of her sisters, or a maid, or anyone. Just not, damn it, by herself. This wasn't interesting. It was idiotic. "Fool woman," he muttered, hopping down from his carriage with every intention of dashing toward the hack, wrenching the door open and dragging her out. But just as his right foot left the confines of his carriage, he was struck by the same madness that led him to wander the world. Curiosity. Several choice curses were grumbled under his breath, all of them self-directed. He couldn't help it. It was so unlike Penelope to be taking off by herself in a hired hack. He had to know where she was going. And so, instead of forcibly shaking some sense into her, he directed his driver to follow the hack, and they rolled north toward the busy thoroughfare of Oxford Street, where, Colin reflected, surely Penelope intended to do a bit of shopping. There could be any number of reasons she wasn't using the Featherington carriage. Perhaps it was damaged, or one of their horses had taken ill, or Penelope was buying someone a gift and wanted to keep it a secret. No, that wasn't right. Penelope would never embark on a shopping expedition by herself. She would take a maid, or one of her sisters, or even one of his sisters. To stroll along Oxford Street by herself was to invite gossip. A woman alone was practically an advertisement for the next whistle-down column. Or used to be, he supposed. It was hard to get used to a life without whistle-down. He hadn't realised how accustomed he'd been to seeing it at his breakfast table whenever he was in town. And speaking of Lady Whistledown, he was even more certain than ever that she was none other than his sister Eloise. He'd gone over to number 5 for breakfast with the express purpose of questioning her, only to be informed that she was still feeling poorly and would not be joining the family that morning. It had not escaped Colin's notice, however, that a rather hefty tray of food had been sent up to Eloise's room. Whatever ailed his sister, it had not affected her appetite. He hadn't made any mention of his suspicions at the breakfast table. Truly, he saw no reason to upset his mother, who would surely be horrified at the thought. It was difficult to believe, however, that Eloise, whose love of discussing scandal was eclipsed only by her thrill at discovering it, would miss the opportunity to gossip about Cressida Tombley's revelation of the night before. Unless Eloise was Lady Whistledown, in which case she'd be up in her room plotting her next step. The pieces all fit. It would have been depressing if Colin hadn't felt so oddly thrilled at having found her out. After they rolled along for a few minutes, he poked his head outside to make sure his driver had not lost sight of Penelope's carriage. There she was, right in front of him. Or at least he thought it was her. Most hired hacks looked the same, so he was going to have to trust and hope that he was following the right one. But as he looked out, he realised that they'd travelled much farther east than he would have anticipated. In fact, they were just now passing Soho Street, which meant they were nearly to Tottenham Court Road. Which meant, dear God, was Penelope taking the carriage to his house? Bedford Square was practically right around the corner. A delicious thrill shot up his spine, because he couldn't imagine what she was doing in this part of town, if not to see him. Who else would a woman like Penelope know in Bloomsbury? He couldn't imagine that her mother allowed her to associate with people who actually worked for a living, and Colin's neighbours, though certainly well enough born, were not of the aristocracy, and rarely even of the gentry, and they all plodded off to work each day, doctoring and lawyering, or... Colin frowned. Hard. They'd just rolled past Tottenham Court Road. What the devil was she doing this far east? He supposed her driver might not know his way around town very well, and thought to take Bloomsbury Street up to Bedford Square, even though it was a bit out of the way, but he heard something very strange, and realised it was the sound of his teeth grinding together. They'd just passed Bloomsbury Street, and were presently veering right onto High Holborn. Devil take it. They were nearly in the city. What in God's name was Penelope planning to do in the city? It was no place for a woman. Hell, he hardly ever went there himself. The world of the Ton was farther west, in the hallowed buildings of St. James's and Mayfair. Not here in the city, with its narrow, twisting medieval roads and rather dangerous proximity to the tenements of the East End. Colin's jaw dropped progressively lower as they rolled on and on and on until he realised they were turning down Shoe Lane. He craned his head out the window. He'd only been here once before, at the age of 9, when his tutor had dragged him and Benedict off to show them where the Great Fire of London had started in 1666. Colin remembered feeling vaguely disappointed when he'd learned that the culprit was a mere baker, who'd not dampened the ashes in his oven properly. A fire like that should have had arson or intrigue in its origin. A fire like that was nothing compared to the feelings coming to a boil in his chest. Penelope had better have a damned good reason for coming out here by herself. She shouldn't be going anywhere unaccompanied, much less the city. Then, just when Colin was convinced that Penelope was going to travel all the way to the Dover coast, the carriages crossed Fleet Street and ground to a halt. Colin held still, waiting to see what Penelope was up to, even though every fibre of his being was screaming to leap out of the carriage and tackle her right there on the pavement. Call it intuition, call it madness, but somehow he knew that if he accosted Penelope right away, he would never learn of her true purpose here near Fleet Street. Once she was far enough away so that he could alight unnoticed, he jumped down from the carriage and followed her south, towards some church that looked decidedly like a wedding cake. "For God's sake," Colin muttered, completely unaware of blasphemy or puns. "Now is not the time to find religion, Penelope." She disappeared into the church, and his legs ate up the pavement after her, slowing only when he reached the front door. He didn't want to surprise her too quickly. Not before he found out what exactly she was doing there. His earlier words notwithstanding, he did not for one moment think that Penelope had suddenly developed a desire to extend her church-going habits to midweek visits. He slipped quietly into the church, keeping his footsteps as soft as he could. Penelope was walking down the centre aisle, her left hand tapping along each pew, almost as if she were counting. Colin frowned as she picked her pew, then scooted in until she was in the middle. She sat utterly still for a moment, then reached into her reticule and pulled out an envelope. Her head moved the teeniest bit to the left, then to the right, and Colin could easily picture her face, her dark eyes darting in either direction as she checked the room for other people. He was safe from her gaze at the back, so far in the shadows that he was practically pressed up against the wall. And besides, she seemed intent upon remaining still and quiet in her movements. She certainly hadn't moved her head far enough to see him behind her. Bibles and prayer books were tucked in little pockets on the backs of the pews, and Colin watched as Penelope surreptitiously slid the envelope behind one. Then she stood and edged her way out toward the centre aisle. And that was when Colin made his move. Stepping out of the shadows, he strode purposefully toward her, taking grim satisfaction in the horror on her face when she saw him.
Col,
she gasped. That would be Colin, he drawled, grasping her arm just above the elbow. His touch was light, but his grip was firm, and there was no way she could think that she might make an escape. Smart girl that she was, she didn't even try. But smart girl that she was, she did attempt to play at innocence.
Colin,
she finally managed to get out.
What a...
Surprise, she gulped.
Yes,
I'm sure it is.
Her eyes darted to the door, to the nave, everywhere but to the pew where she'd hidden her envelope.
I've never seen you here before.
I've never been.
Penelope's mouth moved several times before her next words emerged.
It's quite appropriate, actually, that you'd be here, actually, because... do you know the story of St. Bride's?
He raised one brow.
Is that where we are?
Penelope was clearly trying for a smile, but the result was more of the open-mouthed idiot sort of look. Normally this would have amused him, but he was still angry with her for taking off on her own, not giving a care to her safety and welfare. But most of all, he was furious that she had a secret. Not so much that she'd kept a secret. Secrets were meant to be kept, and he couldn't blame her for that. Irrational as it was, he absolutely could not tolerate the fact that she had a secret. She was Penelope. She was supposed to be an open book. He knew her. He'd always known her. And now it seemed he'd never known her.
Yes,
she finally replied, her voice squeaking on the word.
It's one of Wren's churches, actually, you know. The ones he did after the Great Fire. They're all over the city. And actually, it's my favourite. I do so love the steeple. Don't you think it looks like a wedding cake?
She was babbling. It was never a good sign when someone babbled. It generally meant they were hiding something. It was already obvious that Penelope was making an attempt at concealment, but the uncharacteristic rapidity of her words told him that her secret was exceedingly large indeed. He stared at her for a very long time, drawn out over many seconds just to torture her, then finally asked,
"Is that why you think it's appropriate that I'm here?"
Her face went blank.
"The wedding cake?" he prompted.
"Oh,"
she squealed, her skin flushing a deep, guilty red.
"No, not at all. It's just that what I meant to say was that this is the church for writers. And publishers, I think. About the publishers, that is."
She was flailing, and she knew she was flailing. He could see it in her eyes, on her face, in the very way her hands twisted as she spoke. But she kept trying, kept attempting to keep up the pretense. And so he did nothing but give her a sardonic stare as she continued with,
"But I'm sure about the writers."
And then, with a flourish that might have been triumphant if she hadn't ruined it with a nervous swallow,
"And you're a writer."
"So you're saying this is my church?"
Her eyes darted to her left.
"Yes."
"Excellent,"
she gulped.
"It is."
"Oh, yes,"
he said, with a smooth casualness to his words that was intended to terrify her. Her eyes darted to her left again, toward the pew where she'd hidden her correspondence. She'd been so good until now, keeping her attention off of her incriminating evidence. He'd almost been proud of her for it.
"My church," he repeated.
What a lovely notion. Her eyes grew round, scared.
I'm afraid I don't catch your meaning.
He tapped his finger to his jaw, then held out his hand in a thoughtful manner. I believe I'm developing a taste for prayer.
Prayer?
She echoed weakly.
You?
Oh, yes.
I...
Yes? He queried, beginning to enjoy this in a sick sort of way. He'd never been the angry, brooding type. Clearly, he hadn't known what he was missing. There was something rather pleasing in making her squirm. Penelope, he continued, did you have something to say? She swallowed.
No.
Good. He smiled blandly. Then I believe I require a few moments for myself.
I'm sorry?
He stepped to his right. I'm in a church. I believe I want to pray. She stepped to her left.
I beg your pardon?
He cocked his head very slightly to the side in question. I said that I want to pray. It wasn't a terribly complicated sentiment. He could tell that she was straining hard not to rise to his bait. She was trying to smile, but her jaw was tense, and he'd wager that her teeth were going to grind themselves to powder within minutes.
I didn't think you were a particularly religious person, she said.
I'm not. He waited for her to react, then added, I intend to pray for you. She swallowed uncontrollably.
Me?
She squeaked. Because, he began, unable to prevent his voice from rising in volume, by the time I'm done, prayer is the only thing that is going to save you. And with that, he brushed her aside and strode to where she'd hidden the envelope.
Colin!
She yelled, running frantically after him.
No!
He yanked the envelope out from behind the prayer book, but didn't yet look at it. Do you want to tell me what this is? He demanded. Before I look myself, do you want to tell me?
No,
she said, her voice breaking on the word. His heart breaking at the expression in her eyes.
Please, she begged him. Please give it to me.
And then, when he did nothing but stare at her with hard, angry eyes, she whispered,
It's mine. It's a secret.
A secret worth your welfare? He nearly roared. Worth your life?
What are you talking about?
Do you have any idea how dangerous it is for a woman alone in the city? Alone anywhere? All she said was,
Colin, please.
She reached for the envelope, still held out of her reach. And suddenly he didn't know what he was doing. This wasn't him. This insane fury, this anger, it couldn't be his. And yet it was. But the troubling part was, it was Penelope who had made him thus. And what had she done? Travelled across London by herself? He was rather irritated at her for her lack of concern for her own safety. But that paled in comparison to the fury he felt at her keeping of secrets. His anger was entirely unwarranted. He had no right to expect that Penelope share her secrets with him. They had no commitments to each other, nothing beyond a rather nice friendship and a single, albeit disturbingly moving, kiss. He certainly wouldn't have shared his journals with her if she hadn't stumbled upon them herself.
Colin, she whispered, please don't.
She'd seen his secret writings. Why shouldn't he see hers? Did she have a lover? Was all that nonsense about never having been kissed exactly that? Nonsense? Dear God, was this fire burning in his belly? Jealousy?
Colin,
she said again, choking now. She placed her hand on his, trying to prevent him from opening the envelope. Not with strength, for she could never match him on that. Just with her presence. But there was no way. No way he could have stopped himself at that point. He would have died before surrendering that envelope to her unopened. He tore it open. Penelope let out a strangled cry and ran from the church. Colin read the words, and then he sank to the pew, bloodless, breathless. "Oh, my God," he whispered. "Oh, my God." By the time Penelope reached the outer steps to St. Bride's Church, she was hysterical, or at least as hysterical as she'd ever been. Her breath was coming in short, sharp gasps. Tears pricked her eyes, and her heart felt, well, her heart felt as if it wanted to throw up, if such a thing were possible. How could he have done this? He'd followed her. Followed her! Why would Colin follow her? What would he have to gain? Why would he... She suddenly looked around. "Oh, damn!" she wailed, not caring if anyone heard her. The hack had left. She'd given specific instructions to the driver to wait for her, that she'd only be a minute, but he was nowhere in sight. Another transgression she could lay at Colin's door. He'd delayed her inside the church, and now the hack had left, and she was stuck here on the steps of St. Bride's Church, in the middle of the City of London, so far from her home in Mayfair that she might as well have been in France. People were staring at her, and any minute now she was sure to be accosted, because who had ever seen a gently bred lady alone in the city, much less one who was so clearly on the verge of a nervous attack? Why had she been so foolish as to think that he was the perfect man? She'd spent half her life worshipping someone who wasn't even real, because the Colin she knew, no, the Colin she'd thought she'd known, clearly didn't exist. And whoever this man was, she wasn't even sure she liked him. The man she'd loved so faithfully over the years never would have behaved like this. He wouldn't have followed her. Oh, very well, he would have, but only to assure himself of her safety. But he wouldn't have been so cruel, and he certainly wouldn't have opened her private correspondence. She had read 2 pages of his journal. That was true, but they hadn't been in a sealed envelope. She sank onto the steps and sat down, the stone cool even through the fabric of her dress. There was little she could do now, besides sit here and wait for Colin. Only a fool would take off on foot by herself so far from home. She supposed she could hail a hack on Fleet Street, but what if they were all occupied? And besides, was there really any point in running from Colin? He knew where she lived, and unless she decided to run to the Orkney Islands, she wasn't likely to escape a confrontation. She sighed. Colin would probably find her in the Orkneys, seasoned traveller that he was, and she didn't even want to go to the Orkneys. She choked back a sob. Now she wasn't even making sense. Why was she fixated on the Orkney Islands? And then there was Colin's voice behind her, clipped and so very cold. "Get up," was all he said. She did, not because he'd ordered her to, or at least that was what she told herself, and not because she was afraid of him, but rather because she couldn't sit on the steps of St. Bride's forever, and even if she wanted nothing more than to hide herself from Colin for the next 6 months, at the moment he was her only safe means home. He jerked his head toward the street. "Into the carriage." She went, climbing up as she heard Colin give the driver her address and then instruct him to take the long way. Oh, God. They'd been moving a good 30 seconds before he handed her the single sheet of paper that had been folded into the envelope she'd left in the church. "I believe this is yours," he said. She gulped and looked down. Not that she needed to. She already had the words memorized. She'd written and rewritten them so many times the previous night, she didn't think they'd ever escape her memory. There is nothing I despise more than a gentleman who thinks it amusing to give a lady a condescending pat on the hand as he murmurs, "It is a woman's prerogative to change her mind." And indeed, because I feel one should always support one's words with one's actions, I endeavour to keep my opinions and decisions steadfast and true. Which is why, gentle reader, when I wrote my column of the 19th of April, I truly intended it to be my last. However, events entirely beyond my control, or indeed beyond my approval, force me to put my pen to paper one last time. Ladies and gentlemen, this author is not Lady Cressida Tombley. She is nothing more than a scheming impostor, and it would break my heart to see my years of hard work attributed to one such as her. Lady Whistledown's Society Papers, 21st of April, 1824. Penelope refolded the paper with great precision, using the time to try to compose herself and figure out what on earth she was supposed to say at a moment like that. Finally, she attempted a smile, didn't quite meet his eyes, and joked, "Did you guess?" He didn't say anything, so she was forced to look up. She immediately wished she hadn't. Colin looked completely unlike himself. The easy smile that always tugged at his lips, the good humour forever lurking in his eyes, they were all gone, replaced by harsh lines and cold, pure ice. The man she knew, the man she'd loved for so very long, she didn't know who he was any more.
"I'll take that as a no," she said shakily.
"Do you know what I am trying to do right now?"
he asked, his voice startling and loud against the rhythmic clip-clop of the horse's hooves. She opened her mouth to say no, but one look at his face told her he didn't desire an answer, so she held her tongue.
"I'm trying to decide what, precisely, I am most angry with you about," he said, "because there are so many things, so very many things, that I am finding it extraordinarily difficult to focus upon just one."
It was on the tip of Penelope's tongue to suggest something. Her deception was a likely place to start, but on second thought, now seemed an excellent time to hold her counsel.
"First of all," he said,
the terribly even tone of his voice suggesting that he was trying very hard to keep his temper in check, and this was, in and of itself, rather disturbing, as she hadn't been aware that Colin even possessed a temper.
"I cannot believe you were stupid enough to venture into the city by yourself, and in a hired hack, no less."
"I could hardly go by myself in one of our own carriages," Penelope blurted out,
before she remembered that she'd meant to remain silent. His head moved about an inch to the left. She didn't know what that meant, but she couldn't imagine it was good, especially since it almost seemed as if his neck were tightening as it twisted.
"I beg your pardon?"
he asked, his voice still that awful blend of satin and steel. Well, now she had to answer, didn't she?
It's nothing,"
she said, hoping the evasion would reduce his attention on the rest of her reply.
"Just that I'm not allowed to go out by myself."
"I am aware of that,"
he bit off.
"There's a damned good reason for it, too."
"So, if I wanted to go out by myself,"
she continued, choosing to ignore the second part of his reply,
"I couldn't very well use one of our carriages. None of our drivers would agree to take me here."
"Your drivers," he snapped, "are clearly men of impeccable wisdom and sense."
Penelope said nothing.
"Do you have any idea what could have happened to you?"
he demanded, his sharp mask of control beginning to crack.
Very little, actually," she said, gulping on the sentence. "I've come here before and..."
"What?"
His hand closed over her upper arm with painful force.
"What did you just say?"
Repeating it seemed almost dangerous to her health, so Penelope just stared at him, hoping that maybe she could break through the wild anger in his eyes and find the man she knew and loved so dearly.
"It's only when I need to leave an urgent message for my publisher,"
she explained.
I send a coded message, then he knows to pick up my note here.
And speaking of which, Colin said roughly, snatching the folded paper back from her hands, what the hell is this?
Penelope stared at him in confusion. I would have thought it was obvious.
Yes, of course. You're bloody Lady Whistledown. And you've probably been laughing at me for weeks as I insisted it was Eloise.
His face twisted as he spoke, nearly breaking her heart.
No, she cried out. No, Colin, never. I would never laugh at you.
But his face told her clearly that he did not believe her. There was humiliation in his emerald eyes, something she'd never seen there, something she'd never expected to see. He was a Bridgerton. He was popular, confident, self-possessed. Nothing could embarrass him. No one could humiliate him. Except, apparently, her.
I couldn't tell you,
she whispered, desperately trying to make that awful look in his eyes go away.
Surely you knew I couldn't tell you.
He was silent for an agonizingly long moment, and then, as if she'd never spoken, never tried to explain herself, he lifted the incriminating sheet of paper into the air and shook it, completely disregarding her impassioned outcry.
This is stupidity, he said. Have you lost your mind?
I don't know what you mean.
You had a perfectly good escape, just waiting for you. Cressida Tombley was willing to take the blame for you.
And then, suddenly, his hands were on her shoulders, and he was holding her so tightly she could barely breathe.
Why couldn't you just let it die, Penelope?
His voice was urgent, his eyes blazing. It was the most feeling she'd ever seen in him, and it broke her heart that it was directed toward her in anger and in shame.
I couldn't let her do it, she whispered. I couldn't let her be me.
Chapter 13.
Why the hell not?
Penelope could do nothing but stare for several seconds.
Because,
she flailed, wondering how she was supposed to explain this. Her heart was breaking. Her most terrifying and exhilarating secret had been shattered, and he thought she had the presence of mind to explain herself.
I realise she's quite possibly the biggest bitch,
Penelope gasped,
that England has produced in this generation at least. But for God's sake, Penelope!
He raked his hand through his hair, then fixed a hard stare on her face.
She was going to take the blame.
The credit,
Penelope interrupted testily.
The blame,
he continued.
Do you have any idea what will happen to you if people find out who you really are?
The corners of her lips tightened with impatience and irritation at being so obviously condescended to.
I've had over a decade to ruminate the possibility.
His eyes narrowed.
Are you being sarcastic?
Not at all, she shot back. Do you really think I haven't spent a good portion of the last 10 years of my life contemplating what would happen if I were found out? I'd be a blind idiot if I hadn't.
He grabbed her by the shoulders, holding tight even as the carriage bumped over uneven cobbles.
You will be ruined, Penelope. Ruined! Do you understand what I am saying?
If I did not, she replied, I assure you I would now. After your lengthy dissertations on the subject, when you were accusing Eloise of being Lady Whistledown.
He scowled, obviously annoyed at having his errors thrown in his face.
People will stop talking to you,
he continued.
They will cut you dead.
People never talked to me, she snapped. Half the time they didn't even know I was there. How do you think I was able to keep up the ruse for so long in the first place? I was invisible, Colin. No one saw me. No one talked to me. I just stood and listened, and no one noticed.
That's not true.
But his eyes slid from hers as he said it.
Oh, it is true, and you know it. You only deny it,
she said, jabbing him in the arm.
Because you feel guilty.
I do not.
Oh, please, she scoffed. Everything you do out of guilt.
That involves me, at least.
She corrected.
Her breath was rushing through her throat, and her skin was pricking with heat, and for once her soul was on fire.